Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming from our studios in New York City. Today, and you can watch our video by going to Ustream channel and searching for Gary Null. We're going to be talking about how if you eat shark, you should think twice about it, because this new research out of the University of Miami, and I'll explain why. And then a diet designed to lower blood pressure also reduces the risk of kidney disease from Johns Hopkins University. And resveratrol, that's the nutrient that you get when you end up having grapes in your diet or grape juice. It's really good. And it can also reduce fragility if you're an older person, according to the University of Pablo in Spain. And then a plant extract shows kidney protection, in especially if you're overweight, and more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at some of the contradictions between what people say and what they actually do. I'm going to refer to Hillary Clinton's attacks on Donald Trump about not paying taxes. I'll also take a look at the whole idea of who does pay taxes and who doesn't, and how can we stop that. But for someone who has been so manipulative about where their tax money goes, they shouldn't be throwing stones. You'll hear an audio clip. Also, how about this? President Obama actually telling the truth about Hillary Clinton. Oh, I don't mean what he's saying now on the campaign trail. I mean what he said when he was running against her, and we fact-checked it, and it was accurate. Also, we want to take a look at a reality check. I believe that there's a whole issue behind this administration and the media not attacking at all Saudi Arabia for its participation in 9/11. And I'll also give a commentary that I have created last night about what does it mean when we say we shouldn't have any law that allows them to be sued, because, would you whiz, it opens us up to being sued for similar things that we have done. Now think of that for a moment. Just think, we're telling the world, we're not going to allow you to be sued, but we don't want to be sued for doing similar heinous crimes against humanity. Also, George Carlin brilliantly deciphers hidden political language, and we'll talk about that. And also, we heard about Hillary attacking Trump for his position on building a wall and throwing out illegal immigrants. What about her husband? We found an audio clip of Bill Clinton back when he was in office, when he was president. And where did he say this? He said it in his State of the Union address. So the whole world heard it. We'll play it. See how similar he sounds to Donald Trump. Also today, a commentary, police killing won't stop, Chris Hedges, Truth Dig. Also, I'm going to continue what I started yesterday, and that was showing you the truth about how we were lied to in Libya, and now there's been a commission report showing that it was all lies, and also we were lied to about Syria. All lies. I'll explain. And then, if time permits, you'll have a chance in TalkBack to share your points of view. And I might mention that beginning next Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network, you'll have an opportunity to text or email or phone call live your questions. There's no guest. There's no commentary. It's just 1 hour of you and I sharing insights about empowering ourselves. So that's coming up very shortly. Let's begin. I have several issues. One is, we should be vegan. Are you aware that the majority of fish in the world is not eaten by humans? It's eaten by cattle. Now, I have two cows right now. They are rescued, and I've given them a home, a sanctuary. They have beautiful fields to graze in. They're groomed. They get the finest organic apples and celery and carrots. And they're very loving. They weren't, and they would have been eaten. And you learn about animals. But could you imagine that all those commercial animals out there that are raised in factory farms, that are injected with hormones at their dairy cattle to get more milk out of them, that if they're in a feedlot, they're sometimes waste high in manure, massive diseases of the liver because they're overfed. And one of the things they're fed is fish meal. Now, this is called fish meal protein for cows, but cows don't require any animal proteins. They are able to convert grasses, and that's what they should ideally be eating, fresh, non-sprayed organic grass with their diet. They can convert that to nitrogen and hence protein very conveniently. But we're out there taking a high percentage of all the fish that's caught, and they're taking these trawlers with these lines that go across the ocean floor. They scoop up everything. The trouble is they're also destroying smaller fish that act as a food supply for larger fish, including whales and dolphins. And there's bycatch, where you'll get all other types of fish in with the fish they're trying to catch, and they're just thrown out as garbage. So shark is one of the things that they're out there catching, and especially in Mexico and in Japan and China, because they believe that there's medicinal benefit, aphrodisiac benefit, in eating shark fin. There is not. There's nothing in the shark fin that benefits them. They're decimating millions upon millions upon tens of millions of sharks per year, so much so that we're losing almost the entire world population of sharks. This is from the University of Miami, a new study, and it says the following. University of Miami scientists found high concentrations of toxins linked to neurodegenerative diseases, that would be Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, in the fins and muscles of 10 species of sharks. The research team suggests that restricting consumption of sharks can have positive health benefits for consumers and for shark conservation, since several of the sharks analyzed in the study are threatened with extinction due to overfishing. And then it goes on to talk about all these different chemicals that are very toxic that are now in the shark meat. So the takeaway message is, do not eat sharks. We need them. And the oldest shark, by the way, which recently tagged, was 300 years old. They can live a long time. We actually don't know how long they can live. Who says this 300-year-old shark might not live another 100 years? We don't know. But they shouldn't be eaten. And if you do eat them, you're going to create neurotoxic reactions. From Johns Hopkins University and the Bloomberg School of Public Health, they gave a diet. It's called the DASH diet, D-A-S-H, meaning dietary approaches to stop hypertension. And it's meant to lower blood pressure. But they found out not only did it help lower blood pressure, which it did, but it also helped stop kidney disease. And that was published in the American Journal of Kidney Disease. Quote, in addition to offering other health benefits, consuming a DASH-style diet could help reduce the risk of developing kidney disease. That's the lead researchers on the study. And by the way, kidney disease affects almost 30 million Americans. 30 million. Who knew? And their diet is very high in nuts and fruits and whole grains and legumes and non-fat or low-fat dairy. and it tries to eschew red meat, processed meat, and sweetened beverages and sodium. So it's a healthy diet. So that's going to help lower your blood pressure and help you with kidney disease. Resveratrol. Now, when you have grapes, ideally red grapes, blue grapes, or black grapes, and best of all, if you have them with seeds, maybe a little inconvenient, and you may have to throw them into a blender if you don't have good teeth, but those seeds are extremely important, as are the skin. In fact, it's the skin and the seed that is most important when you're eating grapes. That's good. If not, then have grape juice. That's 10 times better than wine. You'd have to drink an entire case of wine, red wine, at one time to get the benefits of one resveratrol tablet. So grape juice, grapes, way down the line, red wine. And of course, best of all would be the resveratrol as a tablet. Here's the latest on why this is important. This is from University of Pablo de Oliveira in Spain. Quote, the so-called red wine nutrient, that's resveratrol, may help maintain muscle performance and reduce fragility in the elderly. So, that's good. Quote, our results indicate that resveratrol can be considered an ergogenic compound that helps maintain muscle performance during aging and subsequent reduces fragility and increases muscle performance with moderate exercise. So, do your exercise, and if you're over the age of 40, you're in the advanced aging, in which case you need this polyphenol. And again, eat the grapes, drink the grape juice. The grape juice is, for most people, realistically probably the best. And get organic grape juice. And from a university in India, a plant extract shows kidney protection potential in people who are overweight. And this is a cactus-like plant extract in the family of the dogbane. And it is so rich in antioxidants, which provide the capacity to lose weight and help you if you're diabetic. It maintains blood sugar. It helps reduce blood pressure. It helps you with insulin use instead of insulin resistance. And it lowers your triglycerides. So all that's good. I haven't seen it in the United States yet, but I'm sure we will. So if you have kidney problems, if you're diabetic, if you're overweight, if you have high blood pressure, then here's what you'll look for. I'll spell the name for you. It is C-A-R-A Cara Aluma L-U-M-M-A. It's a cactus, and I'm sure someone will bring it out in some form of extract or concentrate. And acupuncture can help improve dementia and impaired memory. This was published in Acupuncture and Medicine. Quote, acupuncture may improve the subtle memory loss that precedes the development of dementia, otherwise known as mild cognitive impairment. So, acupuncture if you have dementia. And finally, I3C, that's indole-3-carbinol. That's what you get when you have broccoli or broccoli sprouts. And this is from the Buck Institute for Research. And it says, it can protect against macular degeneration. So this was published in Scientific Reports. So as we age, a lot of people have oxidative stress in the eyes, and that leads to macular degeneration, a common cause of blindness. Well, indole-3-carbinol, or I3C for short, found in the cruciferous vegetables, is a weak activator of a aryl hydrocarbon receptor protein, which helps clear environment toxins in the retina. And so if you're taking your broccoli or cauliflower or Brussels sprouts or asparagus or kale or mustard greens, collard greens, then and radishes, then you're helping your vision. You're protecting the retina from macular degeneration. So that's good. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Working on some very important films that will be announced in the very near future. Over the next 12 months, about 3 months apart, I'll be premiering three original, brand new, hard-hitting documentaries. The first in about 4 or 5 weeks from now. A lot of us are very concerned, as we should be, about police killings. I believe that one of the ways that we can lessen this is by having much stricter recruiting standards where people go through a real psychological evaluation with a person who can see whether or not this person is likely to act out once they are in uniform and know that they have a large union and they have this camaraderie, the blue line, that is going to protect them if they venture out of where they should. So screening is important. I also believe that we have made a mistake in militarizing the police. I believe that we should have people from the neighborhoods that they're patrolling live in those neighborhoods. I also believe that we should have far greater participation of the citizens in any neighborhood, actually riding in the patrol cars with legal authority to also intervene so that they're seeking a nonviolent outcome to an event. And that is important. Now, there are going to be situations where people are going to commit a crime and shoot at the police. And therefore, when the police return fire, the idea is not to kill the person, but rather to wound them and stop them. But that's a small percentage of all the stops. That's an infinitesimal amount. And why is it that everyone goes for the kill shot instead of the disabling shot? Especially when you have like 8 officers around a person who's got a penknife. That's absurd. They've got vests on, they've got protection, and yet they always kill the person, it seems. So if we look at it for what is the object we want, people to stop being profiled. So we have to have strict guidelines that if you profile someone for arrest or for bringing harm to that person or harassment, then you should lose your job and you should be held criminally culpable. And the only way you're going to do that is you've got to get people in there who are not a part of the buddy system but are part of the community system. You really need a community person in every one of those situations. I believe if we did that, that would go far. But more importantly than anything, if you want to stop a lot of the crime in America, change the circumstances that the crime derive from. Bring jobs back into communities. Allow small businesses to flourish. Turn a lot of the abandoned garbage buildings that the city has possession of over to the community to allow them to be developed for theaters, for workshops, for learning trades, for counseling, for therapy. Think for community gardens, for hospice care, for assisted living care. Think of the things you could do if you took a whole block, 2, 3, 10, 20 blocks and rehabilitated them. Where would you get the money? Simple. Give a 2-to-1 tax break for any corporation. For every dollar you donate, you get to deduct 2. That's not the case now. Corporations be falling all over themselves to get a legal a way of putting money into community, and that money actually is helping society. Otherwise, it's going into the federal budget, and over 57% goes to the military-industrial complex, which causes nothing but destruction. So if you're putting it back into communities, and you're hiring people within the communities, and you are changing the community by having jobs, living wages, health benefits, and a community that is thriving, again, you're going to have a whole lot less crime to begin with. But it's more than that. It's also, according to Chris Hedges, it's more serious. He is not as optimistic. And I believe that we have to at least bear thought to his insights. Why? Because the corporate state, and that's what we are today, we are a corporate state. If you doubt me, ask your state legislators, have you ever voted for any piece of legislation that was given to you in exclusive conferences once or twice a year, where you were coached on how to present this as if you created it, the state legislator, instead of the 200 to 300 major corporations behind the scenes who are going to put money into your campaign so you get reelected? But in turn, you're going to make this a law, and this is going to take away things we don't like and include things we do. How many legislators would be left untainted who have not sold out? So you see, even when we think that at the local level, the state level, the national level, we have in the media, we have people who care about our interest, that is self-deception. There are certainly some good people out there, but they do not control the system. What controls the system is the corporate state. So no matter how many protests take place in American cities over the murder of unarmed civilians, this will not put any restraint on the police or the organs of security and surveillance. It will not protect the victims of state violence. It will continue to grant broader powers and greater resources to militarized police departments and internal security forces such as the Homeland Security Force, along with the systems of indoctrination and propaganda, which is the last prop that keeps the corporate elites in power. These elites will do nothing to diminish the mechanisms necessary for their control. Did you ever notice that in all the areas of the United States, what I call green zones, these people always seem to have the greatest amount of police security? And if you can't prove that you belong there, you're told to get out of there. Even walking down a public street that should be open to everyone, you will be stopped if you're a person of color, more often than not. You'll be questioned, you'll be searched. And if you can't show that you're working or living in that area, then they suspect you of being there to rob or do some harm or create some crime, even if nothing like that were to occur at all. Now, you go anywhere else, and they don't care who's there. It's not important to them. That's why I say society will not collapse all at once. Remember, even if our dollars went maybe 20% less in value, which I believe they will in the next 3 years, you will not lessen the skyscrapers, the suburbs, the gated communities, the malls in gated communities. You will not lessen the gentrified areas. Those will be the green zones, and there'll be probably close to 1,000 of them. And that'll hold about 50 million people. But what about the other 270 million people? What's supposed to happen to them? Well, they won't have the resources. And they will have the police. They have the military. But they won't have the social support or infrastructure maintenance that is required to have a quality of life. They won't have the jobs. Because implosion doesn't happen all at once for everyone. Only a natural disaster can cause that. You see, global capitalism is not concerned with the cohesiveness of the nation state. The relentless quest for profit trumps internal stability. Everything and everyone is pillaged and harvested for profit. Democracy is a mirage. A useful fiction to keep the population passive and compliant. Propaganda. including entertainment and spectacle and coercion, through state-administered surveillance and violence are the primary tools of governance. This is why, despite years of egregious police violence, there is absolutely no effective reform happening anywhere. Propaganda is not solely about instilling an opinion. It's also about appropriating the aspirations of the citizenry into the vocabulary of the power elite. The Clintons and Barack Obama built their careers mastering this duplicity. They speak in words that reflect the concerns of the citizens while pushing through programs and legislation that mock those programs and concerns. This has been especially true in the long campaign to curb excessive police force. The liberal elites preach tolerance and professionalism and promote diversity, but they do not challenge the structural racism and economic exploitation that are the causes of this crisis. They treat the abuses of corporate oppression as if they were minor administrative defects rather than essential components of corporate power. And if you doubt me, why don't you try running guns? Why don't you try selling drugs? Why don't you try money laundering? And why don't you sell something that you knew in advance could hurt someone and see how long your prison sentence is? It'll be swift. Your public condemnation will be extreme. Now, let Wells Fargo exploit the public. Let them trade in commodities essential to life and fix the market. Let them fix the LIBOR. Let them fix gold and prices and silver prices. No one goes to jail. No reputation is tainted. Let them create a product like Vioxx that killed between 60 to 500,000 Americans and had 180,000 Americans with heart attacks. They pay a fine. They got to keep their gains. And so there are two standards in America. The police state represents one. There is no one representing our side. There was a book called The First Civil Right, How Liberals Built Prison America. And the documents in this book show that the so-called reforms enacted to professionalize police departments result in placing more money and more resource in the hands of the police, giving them greater power to act with impunity and expanding legally sanctioned violence. All penal reform from President Harry Truman's 1947 Committee on Civil Rights report to the Safe Streets Act of 1968 to the Sentencing Reform Act of 1984, to contemporary calls for more professionalism, have only made things worse. The fiction used to justify expanding police powers, a fiction perpetrated by the Democratic politicians such as Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Obama, is that a modernized police will make possible a just and post-racial America. White supremacy, racism, corporate exploitation, however, are built into the economic model of neoliberalism and our system of inverted totalitarianism. A discussion about police violence has to include a discussion of corporate power, but it doesn't. Police violence is one of the primary pillars that allow the corporate elites to retain power. That violence will end only when the rule of these elites ends. The calls for more training and professionalism, the hiring of minority police officers, the use of body and dash cameras, improving procedures for due process, creating citizen review boards, even the reading the Miranda rights, have done zero, nothing, to halt the indiscriminate use of lethal violence and abuse of constitutional rights by the police and courts. Reforms have served only to bureaucratize, professionalize, and legalize state abuse and murder. Innocent men and women may no longer be lynched on a tree, but they are lynched on death row and in the streets of New York and Baltimore and Ferguson and Charlotte and dozens of other cities. They are lynched for the reasons poor black and minorities have always been lynched, to create a reign of terror that serves as an effective form of social control. So the wreckage left behind by deindustrialized society created a dilemma for the corporate state. The vast pools of surplus or redundant labor in our former manufacturing centers meant the old forms of social control had disappeared. The corporate state needed harsher measures to subjugate a population it condemned as human refuge. Those on probation and parole or in jails or in prison grew from 780,000 in 1965 to 7 million by 2010. Kinds of federal crimes punishable by death leaped from almost 1 in 1974 to 66 in 1994, thanks to President Clinton and Hillary Clinton. The lengths of prison sentences tripled and quadrupled. Laws were passed to turn inner-city communities into miniature police states. And this had nothing to do with crime. It had everything to do with corporatizing a society. State-administered violence is all that lies between the corporate state and widespread unrest. The power elites know that. They also know that as this unrest begins to define the white underclass, the legal and physical shackles perfected for poor people of color can easily be expanded. Rights in America become privileges, and the corporate state has created legal mechanisms, including the loss of our right to privacy, to remove these privileges the instant it feels threatened. I'm ashamed of the liberal class today because it's been corporatized or it's too dumb to understand how it's participated in the destruction of our society. Liberal rhetoric of compassion is a destructive concept, just as conservatives' call for law and order is a destructive concept. Are you holding yourself to those same standards of law and order? If you're a Republican or Democrat or conservative or liberal in the business class, in the elite class, in the legal class, no. No, the liberal stances are patronizing. They reduce structural and economic oppression to personal and psychological problems, as if we can solve police murder by training and empowering some good people, supporting families, or rewriting regulations. As long as our discussion of police violence ignores the social functions of police and prisons, the elites have nothing to fear. The police, in the end, are not the problem. They, like the military, are the foot soldiers for the corporate leviathan. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. The sugar runs by. I feel nice. The sugar is fine. So nice.
Let's talk about hypocrisy for a moment. Let's talk about Clinton challenging Trump on not paying his taxes, and Trump bragging that, well, he's within the law and he is right, but that's wrong. You see, as long as you're wealthy, you can hire the type of tax lawyers that can get you to pay little or no taxes. And many corporate, major Fortune 500 corporations have paid no taxes and in some cases gotten billions of dollars in refunds. If you had one flat tax and eliminated the IRS completely, eliminated the Federal Reserve completely, and had every single person that has a business, no matter how small or large, pay one flat tax. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's 20% instead of 35% now. That one tax would bring us in over $1.5 trillion a year in money that we're not making now, more than what we're making, because there wouldn't be any loopholes. Then you have a one-time forgiveness. All monies, individual or corporate, that are residing in these hundreds of offshore tax haven accounts in Ireland, for example, in the Canary Islands, you could bring back in, but you pay a one-time only, let's just make it simple, 20% tax. Now, it's estimated there's over $32 trillion. So you're bringing in $6 trillion right there. And then that money can be used inside the United States. So I think that it's important that we have a flat tax that, and then eliminate the IRS completely and that whole bureaucracy. But here is the part that Clinton didn't say about how her and her husband pay taxes and where their tax money goes.
Bill and Hillary Clinton just released their 2015 tax returns, and they present what I would call a teachable moment. In 2015, the Clintons wrote off $1,042,000 in charitable contributions. Of that, $1 million went to none other than the Clinton Family Foundation, where they get to control the flow of the money. So in 2015, 96% of the Clintons' charity went to themselves. The rest of their charitable donations from that year went to an establishment named the Desert Classic Charities. That same year, that same charity made a $700,000 donation back to the Clintons. So the Clintons donated to it, and then it donated to the Clintons, and what did they both get for it? Tax deductions. And more importantly, control of where all that money flowed. The year before, in 2014, the Clintons donated $3 million to their foundation. After themselves, the charity that received the most of the Clintons' charity was the Diplomacy Center Foundation, a charity whose board includes Henry Kissinger, Condoleezza Rice, Madeleine Albright, James Baker, Colin Powell, and, oh yeah, Hillary Clinton. So in 2014, the Clintons got a huge tax deduction for donating to themselves again, and they and their friends kept control of the millions. So that's how money flows from the Clintons back to themselves and their friends. To complete the circle, let's look at how the money flows to the Clintons. Since 2001, the Clintons have made more than $150 million.
So there you have this, Marty. So the Clintons paid taxes, small amount on the amount that they have. They're worth over $120 million, plus the foundation they control, worth close to $2 billion. And over 60 states outside the United States, countries, sovereign countries, like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, gave the Clinton Foundation tens of billions of dollars. And of course, the Clintons can write off all their expenditures, their private jets, all that, their dinners, security, all come from the expenses. As a result, the vast majority of money in the Clinton Foundation that is spent goes to administration, not to help the poor. It's just a game. And as long as we allow that game, then when they have these moments where they're trying to ridicule each other, we're not seeing the full picture. But another thing, when Hillary was attacking Clinton for his position on illegal aliens, now she's trying to curry the Latino vote. Okay, she wants to make it look like her and her husband have always been pro-Latino, pro those immigrants. We want to help you. We want to get you an education. We want to get you in the United States. We want to get you social benefits. Okay, well, that'll certainly inspire some people. But here's what her husband said at the State of the Union address to the whole nation, and she helped write that speech. Listen in.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more, by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
Well, now, gee whiz, so what is it? Which one are you supporting? You see, this is what happens when you dig a little deeper than the sound bites that are orchestrated by coaches before debates to try to make one person look better than the other. You can tell me that a spitting cobra is less lethal than a black mamba or a sea snake. They both kill you rather quickly. I wouldn't befriend either. Now, I want to have a reality check on also on Obama telling the truth. He's actually telling the truth. We have fact-checked each of these statements, but this is not now when he's out on the campaign trail telling you all good things about Hillary. This is when he was looking at the real Hillary.
When Hillary Clinton says I'm out of touch, I just have to remind people of the track record. So now this is Senator Clinton. This is the same person who has taken more money from lobbyists than any other candidate, Democratic or Republican, taking more money from drug company lobbyists and insurance company lobbyists. This is the same person who says she's voting for the Columbia trade deal. Turns out that her top advisor, her top strategist, was working for the Colombian government to get the bill passed. This is the same person who spent a decade with her husband campaigning for NAFTA and now goes around saying how she was opposed to NAFTA. This is the same person who took money from financial folks on Wall Street and then voted for a bankruptcy bill that makes it harder for folks right here in Pennsylvania to get a fair shake. Hillary Clinton's out there, you know, like she's out in the duck blind every Sunday. She's packing a six shooter. Come on. She knows better. That's some politics being played by Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it is. Just remember, as of today, every single head of every single Fortune 500 company is supporting Hillary Clinton. The Koch brothers are supporting Hillary Clinton. Former Bush, President Senior, supporting Hillary Clinton. The banking system supporting Hillary Clinton. Big Pharma supporting Hillary Clinton. These major Wall Street hedge funds supporting Hillary Clinton. Why would they be supporting her unless they knew that they would be supported in return? Now, I want to give you a break for a moment and tell you we got something brand new. I haven't offered it before. I'm offering it for the first time. It's a 4-CD set, 4 hours, called The Deep State, The Masters of Wealth Who Control the World. It took us over a year of research to do this. This is unlike anything you've ever heard before. We name all the names. We show you how they work together. We show you how one family owns over 160 of the world's largest banks, but you'll see their name on no bank. But they have the controlling interest because they own the stock and their people on the boards. Another company, another family owns insurance companies, heavily invested in thousands of companies that they can control. They're the ones who fund all the think tanks, and yet you don't see their name. They want to stay out of the picture. Well, we've shown a light into their life, so you get to see who they are. And these are the people who were behind also the manipulation of Woodrow Wilson, the Third Reich, the creation of the CIA, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. In fact, one of these is the most detailed accounting of the assassination of JFK you've ever heard. They got us into the Vietnam War and the military state to this day. They're behind the Cold War, the new Cold War. They are the masters of wealth. So isn't it time that you really had an understanding of who is behind all this? It's the same group of people, and they've had a legacy going on for over 100 years. It's called the Deep State, the masters of wealth who control the world. A 4-CD set, 4 hours. In depth. You've not heard this before, haven't offered it before. It's normally $80. Today it's $39.95, half price. Opening up to you a whole new world, a reality. You can call to get your Deep State 4-CD set sent out immediately by calling 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You really have to hear this to appreciate it. 877-627-5065. Additionally, today we're going to offer our Grains and Greens, the raw, all-natural, organic product that is so good. It's vegan, it's kosher, and what is it? It's got the best. It's a blend of the alfalfa and the organic flax seeds and kamut, and oatgrass and pumpkin seeds and quinoa sprouts and kamut sprouts and spelt sprouts and amaranth sprouts. It has the yucca and ginger and chia and Panax ginseng and bromelain and three types of seaweed and fennel and probiotics, 8 billion probiotics and mixed carotenoids. And that's it, outside of sweet stevia and a natural cherry pineapple juice as a flavor. And it is terrific for you. It only has 59 calories. It's got dietary fiber, has protein in it, but what it has is tremendous. It has a whole load of polyphenols, phytonutrients, antioxidants, and probiotics. This is what your cells really need. I make sure that no matter where I travel in the world, and I've just been on the road for 3 months, I always have my packs. I don't take them in bottles. I put them in plastic, these little green plastic bags that last, and I have about 12 of them, and I take them with me. Because frequently I just have some water, mix these, I'm good to go. Sometimes I'm working 20 hours or more straight through in this filming I'm doing and research. So grains and greens, that's a way to start your day. Put it in with all the other mixes you have. If you have grape stuff, great. If you have nut and seed stuff, good. We're out of that right now. We're getting more manufactured. And by the way, I do very small runs. Normally you might do 100,000 jars. I do 1,000 jars because I want it as fresh can be. So it's the freshest, it's the best blends, and I give you amounts necessary to really cause a difference in your body. You're getting this at sale price today also, a tremendous sale price. I believe, don't quote me on this, I think it's a $49.95, but the person calling will give you the number, but it's a big discount for grains and greens, what our body benefits from. You take one scoop, put it in there, and watch finicky eaters appreciate what happens in their body. Give it to people who need something good that are not normally going to eat good, even though they should, give this to them. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To spend the rest of today's program trying to provide truth to the lie that we invaded Libya because Gaddafi was going to massacre his citizens in the thousands. That was all a lie, and the same with Syria. I'm going to share a report from James Carden from Consortium News called How Libyan Regime Change Lies Echo in Syria. Quote, earlier this month, a select committee of British parliamentarians released a report which condemned the United Kingdom government under David Cameron for its role in the 2011 NATO intervention in Libya. The report makes plain that the principal basis on which the intervention was predicated by then-Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi was on the verge of committing a wholesale slaughter of the rebel stronghold of Benghazi. That was a lie propagated by the Western and Gulf states' media outlets. It also shows the extent to which the crisis was driven by Libyan exiles, who perhaps quite understandably had an axe to grind with Gaddafi's regime. In this and in other ways, as we shall see, the Libyan crisis shares a number of similarities with the Syrian crisis. Indeed, it would be fair to view the debacle in Libya as a dress rehearsal for the war outside powers have been waging against the sovereign government of Syria for the past 5 years. The United Kingdom report documents the extent to which the narrative of impending genocide was driven by the delusions of Libyan exiles. Quote, Libyan exiles based in France were influential in raising fears about a possible massacre in Benghazi. Visiting professor at King's College London, Professor George Joffe, told us that, quote, the decisions of President Sarkozy and his administration were driven by Libyan exiles getting allies within the French intellectual establishment who were anxious to push for real change in Libya, end quote. Indeed, the United Kingdom Select Committee was told, quote, immigrants opposed to Gaddafi exploited unrest in Libya by overstating the threat to civilians and encouraging Western powers to intervene. The narrative crafted by Libyan exiles was swallowed hook, line, and sinker by a willingly credulous Western press. Similarly, dynamics were at play during the initial phase of the crisis in Syria. Professor Tim Anderson at the University of Sydney notes that Syrian clerics in exile in Saudi Arabia, like Sheikh Amar, quote, called for a holy war against the liberal Alawi Muslims who dominated the Assad government. Let me just stop there for a moment to explain why this is important. So here's a radical Sunni Wahhabist that is out of Libya condemning the liberal, progressive, and open religious environment within Libya. Now, who supports that? Saudi Arabia, with Wahhabism, and Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, and the other states in the Middle East. Of the 22 Arab states, most support Sunnism. Of course, not all support Wahhabism within Sunnism, but this guy did. So nobody was looking at the fact that he's extremely biased and that he didn't like the idea that this was a very secular state. Women had lots of rights. You couldn't abuse women. You couldn't tell them what to wear. You couldn't tell them what education they could or could not have. You couldn't tell them they can't drive a car. All that you could do in Saudi Arabia, because it didn't work there. So no one challenged this guy. And as a result, the so-called liberal community took this and went with it. The journalist Eva Bartlett, who has been on the ground in Syria, has written that the problem with many of the Western media accounts of the Syrian crisis is that, quote, many talking heads draw from one source, the UK-based Syrian Ramadi of the so-called Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Now, think about that. How many times have you heard someone reporting on what was going on in Syria, but it was reported through the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights? Is that a big organization that has monitors all over Syria? No. It's just one guy in his basement in England, in Coventry. One guy. And he hasn't been in Syria in 15 years. And what's more, his operation is reliant upon reports by the opposition figures. So he's not getting anyone who's pro-Assad, pro-Syrian. No. So he's not an impartial source. Just like Al Jazeera is not an impartial source on this issue. Now, other exile groups, like the Syrian National Council, has received millions of dollars in funding from the declared enemies of Assad's regime, like Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. Meanwhile, regime change groups like the Aleppo Media Center and the Washington-based Syrian Expatriates Organization have, according to Anderson, received, quote, hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations from unnamed sources. Well, Professor Anderson tells us, quote, like many other U.S.-created front groups, the Syrian campaign, the White Helmets, the CEO is committed, the SEO is committed to overthrow the Syrian government. Well, and then there is the role Western media has played in ginning up the two crises, one in Libya and one in Syria. The United Kingdom report on Libya, citing Amnesty International, quote, quote, Western media coverage has been from the outset presented with a very one-sided view of the logic of events, portraying the protest movement as entirely peaceful and repeatedly suggesting that the regime security forces were unaccountably massacring unnamed demonstrators who presented no security challenge, end quote. Remember that? We were said, look at all these peaceful demonstrators. They're all being mowed down. Let's stop this. That's the message that was perpetrated. In fact, the opposite was the case. Completely the opposite. We were lied to. security forces in both Libya and Syria came under attack by Islamic radicals from the very start. These were hardly the peaceful protests as portrayed in the Western media. As the UK report points out, quote, it is now clear that militant Islamic militias played a critical role in the rebellion of February 2011 onwards. So from the very get-go, these people have been thrown out of these countries because they were terrorists, came back in, and then working with the CIA and working with the Israelis and working with the Saudis and the Turks, they began to infiltrate peaceful movements, and then we never saw that. We weren't told that. And likewise, the dominant myth surrounding the Syrian crisis that millions of peaceful Syrians took to the streets as part of the liberalization wave which roiled the Arab world in the spring of 2011, Human Rights Watch declared that the Syrian protesters, quote, only use violence against the security forces. Okay. Indeed, all the violence, which soon unfolded, was said to be the fault of Assad's police state and Assad's subsequent refusal to step down. So the story goes. But it's all a lie. Why? Because as recently as last summer, none other than former Prime Minister David Cameron called Assad a recruiting sergeant for ISIS, and while this claim is nonsensical, as it is disingenuous, it is in line with what has been dutifully parroted by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who in April told CNN, quote, ISIS was primarily the result of the vacuum in Syria caused by Assad first and foremost. Hello, did we forget about all the prisoners in Abu Ghraib? Did we forget about all the homes that were broken into in the middle of the night in Iraq? Did we forget about all the people who were punished, their relatives killed, injured, tasered, brutalized, tortured? That was the cause of the rise of ISIS. Had nothing to do with Syria at all. In fact, from the very start, the opposition to Assad included sectarian extremists who chanted, quote, Christians to Beirut, Alawis to the grave. That meant they were going to kill the Alawis. Professor Anderson cited an Israeli National News report of March 21, 2011, which told, quote, seven police officers and at least four demonstrators in Syria have been killed. The armed forces came to Dara precisely because police had been killed by snipers. Okay. And we even have the interview with a priest who was there and observed this. And here's what he has to say. He says, the Jesuit missionary observed that, quote, most of the citizens of Syria do not support the opposition, meaning the terrorist. You also cannot say that this is a popular uprising. The majority of the people are not part of the rebellion and certainly not part of the armed rebellion. What is occurring is, above all, a struggle between the army and the armed Sunni groups, there's your terrorist, that aim to overthrow the Alawite regime and take power. That's your Saudi Arabia and also Turkey. Quote, from the start, the protest movements were not purely peaceful. From the start, I saw, this is the priest saying this, I saw armed demonstrators marching along in the protest who began to shoot at the police first. Very often, the violence of the security forces has been a reaction to the brutal violence of the armed rebels, end quote. Also inconvenient to the dominant narrative is the fact that even after the large-scale anti-government protest, an escalation of violence, 55% of Syrians polled in 2012 wanted Assad to remain in power. So let's just understand something. Here you have a country that had freedom, that allowed all religions, that protected women's rights, and now you have armed snipers coming in and shooting Syrian police. It was not the police shooting the demonstrators. So they did this, by the way, in Venezuela against Hugo Chavez, where they had agent provocateurs and saboteurs. So here you have it, but you knew none of this from any of the American media, including programs on Pacifica. So, and they also had, by the way, did you know that Gaddafi's sons in Libya wanted to be able to leave the country early on and were meeting with and speaking with Tony Blair? and they never allowed that to happen. They wanted to leave, and they were stopped. Our State Department, Clinton State Department, knew that they wanted to leave. Obama knew they wanted to leave, and they didn't. And this report addresses that, opportunities lost. So this was the facts from James Carden, contributing writer to The Nation magazine and the editor of the American Committee on East-West Accord. So you see, there's always another side to the story if we're open to the truth. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.